Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grunniblink. I am the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, Blake and I are going to run through the last 4 days of the NHL schedule and talk about our fantasy seasons and the lessons we learned. Let's hit it. And of course, I have your friend and my best friend, the man with the greatest cake, Blake Creamer. Blake, how are we feeling tonight?
The greatest cake. Oh, what? You know, that's, do you ever watch those baking shows, Nate? Because I'm kind of into that. And like, I literally, you know, if I had it to do over again, right? Like money's no object, I would legit go to baking school. So I don't know. Right. We have some synergy here. Like I like baking, you know what I mean? Although I'm not a very organized person. So I'd probably just like slap the flour in. It would come out like all melted and weird looking. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about. I like I may have made a reference that is from a decade that you're not a part of. So I apologize for that in advance, but maybe we should continue on and get into the week 26 schedule. What's left of it here? There's 4 days left of some people's fantasy seasons, not our fantasy seasons, Blake. We've wrapped everything up. But for the poor souls toiling still in the trenches, trying to eke out their fantasy championships, we are going to provide just a little bit here. Just briefly, we'll run through the schedule. I will say, if you have not already checked it out, we did do a waiver wire show back on episode 297 of the podcast. So if you need to, go check that out, and you can definitely get all of our takes. We covered the entire week 26, including these four games and what you can do, you know, between the weeks. So much more of our takes about that is in there, and what teams to target and whatnot. Obviously, there's been some things that have transpired between then and now, but just a quick refresher. So on Monday, we have 8 games, Tuesday, 8 games, Wednesday, 4 games, Thursday, 6 games. So all fairly light evenings in the NHL. Probably going to be able to get some players in on each one. All of them, the Edmonton, I should say, is the only team that has 3 games played. They don't have much to play for. That could lead to some more minutes for guys that are down the lineup. So do be cognizant of that. And then there are 5 teams that play Monday, Tuesday, back to back. You've got Boston, Detroit, Montreal, and Ottawa there. So definitely you can check out those teams. Did I say 5 teams? I meant 4 teams there. But yeah, definitely you can check out those teams if you want to get a quick head start in this back end of the week. If you got a spot open, you want to, maybe you have 2 ads left and you want to get a quick back to back out of a player, and then maybe go for a goalie stream on Wednesday or Thursday. That can be a really good way to do it. There are 3 teams that play on Monday and Wednesday. That's going to be the Islanders, Pittsburgh Penguins, and Tampa Bay Lightning. The Edmonton Oilers do as well, but they also have the 3rd game played on the Thursday as well. And then Toronto's the only team that has a Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back, so they're in the mix there as well. And then you got 6 teams that play Tuesday and Thursday. That's Calgary, Chicago, Seattle, Vancouver, Vegas, and Winnipeg. I'm not going to really dig into all the specific players off every single one of these teams. If you've got any decisions that you need to make in the last part of the schedule, please hit me up, hit Blake up. We'll get you through it. You know, provide us who you're thinking about, what days you have openings in your starting roster. If you got any constraints that way, that'll help us. If it's categories, obviously, you know, give us where your categories are at and give us your roster and give us some idea of what you're up against, and we can talk you through it. You know, hit us up on Twitter. If you're in the Apples and Genos Discord, that's the best place to get a hold of us. You can DM us in there, or just tag us, you know, in one of the main channels. That works as well. Definitely in this last few days of the NHL season, I want to make sure that we're bringing everybody to the finish line here. I know a lot of my personal workload in terms of fantasy hockey has dwindled at this point in the season. A lot of people are already done with their fantasy seasons like I am. And so I just have a lot more time and availability to help people out. So if that's you, by all means, reach out to me, reach out to Blake. We would be absolutely happy to, yeah, just help you out, help you get across the finish line, help you bring home a championship. If you have won a championship or you're getting close, then by all means, hit us up in the same way, tag us on Twitter, whatever works. Let us know about your, how well it went in the finals, or if you lost in a heartbreaking fashion. All those stories are good to hear, good to commiserate with other people who've done the same thing as well. Whatever works, is good for me. So, yeah, reach out. Don't be a stranger. We want to enjoy this fantasy hockey experience together. So yeah. Don't be a stranger. Reach out. One thing that I do want to get into before we get into kind of what's going to be the, I guess, the main portion of this episode, I do want to just reach out and say, if you're in the Toronto area, I am going to be hosting a meetup in the Toronto area, in downtown Toronto, I should say, April 27th, this Saturday. So if you are around, and I mean, you don't have to be from the Toronto area. If you want to come to Toronto for April 27th and be there for that, then by all means, yeah, head out this way, and I'll be happy to meet some people. Last year we met some people. It was great. We had a great time. It was a small crowd, but it was kind of fun that way too. And this year I'm really hoping that we can do something similar again. Maybe we'll have some more people this time around. Obviously the Discord and the listeners have grown by a lot. So maybe we'll have a bunch more people come out. That'd be awesome. I'd love to meet more people this time around. Still working out the details of exactly what we're going to do, but rest assured, we'll be getting some drinks at some point, and yeah, just spending some time getting to know people, shake hands. Yeah, I just want to meet some more people and talk some fantasy hockey, and yeah, meet people in real life. A lot of the times, a lot of the relationships that we have in this game, because of the online nature of it, are kind of impersonal in a way. They sometimes feel personal because of, you know, I mean, there's some people that I've DM'd like 1,000 times this year, just back and forth, talking strategy about their lineups and stuff, but never had the chance to actually meet them or put a face on the username. So stuff like that is always great to do. So if you are available to come to Toronto to meet up with us April 27th, then definitely don't hesitate to reach out. I've made a Discord channel for this in the Apples and Geos Discord server. You can check that out, or you can DM me and I'll make sure that you get the details one way or the other. All right. So basically, the main gist of this episode is one thing that we do every year here at Apples and Geos. Basically, we go through our teams. We kind of evaluate the season that was, how we got to the place that we ended up at the end of the season, mistakes that were made along the way, good decisions that were made along the way that maybe we can learn something from. Basically, the whole idea is that we want to learn from the season that was and carry forward the things that were good, and to learn from and leave in the past the things that should be left in the past, the things that hindered us from our fantasy hockey goals. So for myself, just to preface, I was in 3 redraft and 1 keeper league this year, 4 leagues in total. 2 of those redraft were head-to-head points, and 1 was a head-to-head banger cats league. So I'm just going to lean into it here with the We Call Ourselves Experts League. This is the league that I run. It's a 12-team head-to-head points league. It is the keeper league, so we keep 3 players every year. There's no stipulations. You can keep any 3 players any year. So just keep your best 3 players, and your first 3 picks every year are those 3 players. The draft starts in the 4th round. There's lots of managers that you would probably know in this league. Blake's in the league. Josh is in the league. Banksy's in the league. Mark Barber, 18 Skaters, is in the league. Raj from 5 Holes in the league. Devin from Devin from Fantasy Hockey Hacks. Sorry, the brain fart there. Devin from Fantasy Hockey Hacks is in here. Fired Up Fantasy, Jared's in here. And James, Fantasy Hockey Trades, is in here as well. So there's lots of people that you probably recognize if you've been around the fantasy hockey space or community for any length of time. Lots of really good managers in there. And then we've got some sharp managers that we picked from the Apples and Geos Discord in there as well. So in this league, I had won the championship last year. And I traded a bunch of this year's picks to get there last year. So I was trading away my futures to get that championship. It did come through for me. I was able to win last year, but did mean that I didn't have all my picks, didn't have a full complement of picks this year. So that was definitely a tough spot to start from. In the end, I finished 9th in the league. I finished 6th in the league in regular season points for. So that was still like decently good in my mind, considering that I started from behind in terms of the drafts. But overall, I was relatively happy with the finish. I was trying to obviously win out the consolation in this league. If you win the consolation, you get the first pick overall. So that's what I was trying to do. I wasn't able to pull it home, so I'll get the third pick instead there with the 9th place finish. But overall, relatively happy with the campaign still. In the draft, I kept Rantanen, Josi, and Zibanejad. Zibanejad was a bit of a disappointment, but Rantanen and Josi were obviously just as good as I had hoped and thought that they could be. My best picks in this draft, Carter Verhaeghe at 60 was definitely a good one. Brad Marchand at 84 turned out to be pretty solid. Best two were probably Brandon Hagel at 176 and Brock Besser at 181. Both players stayed on my team the entire season and provided a lot of points for me. So those, were really great to have, very late in this draft for sure. My worst picks, I took Drake Batherson at 61. Doesn't sound terrible on the face of it, but Travis Konecny, Victor Hedman, Sam Reinhart, and Philip Forsberg all went within the next 10 picks, which makes it a little hard to stomach in retrospect. Other than that, you know, I didn't have a lot of early picks to be messing up, right? The first three were all keepers, and then the next bunch were not, you know, terrible picks, but I did miss on most of my later picks. Like I took a Bowen Byram, I took a Jakub Vrana, I took an Andrew Mangiapane, I stashed Brandon Montour and Max Pacioretty, so I was stashing players there. Yeah, overall, didn't really have much beyond that, much in the way of picks to mess up. The later picks, I mean, you're never gonna be too sad if your, you know, 132nd overall pick doesn't work out. So that's about as bad as it got. Best ads, so I picked up Juraj Slefkovský, not after the kind of initial breakout. If you'll remember, he kind of had an initial breakout past the halfway point of the season. Then he had a cold stretch. He was dropped, and I picked him up after that. And then obviously he was pretty great till the end of the season. Then I had Wyatt Johnston, who I picked up on February 19th. I had Matt Duchene. Put a $16 waiver actually in for Matt Duchene December 4th and kept him for the rest of the season. I'll get to it, but I actually had Duchene on my roster twice in this season, but kept him after that point, and he was obviously terrific all season. And Stuart Skinner, October 30th, he was dropped very early in the season. This is a league that really devalues goaltenders. It's a league that I commissioned, so you might not be shocked by that that statement overall. But yeah, Stuart Skinner had a really rough start, if you'll recall. He was dropped very early in this league. I picked him up, and I did hang on to him for pretty much the entire season, just getting volume, which in a points league is a pretty decent place to be. And volume on Edmonton, which obviously turned things around in November and had a pretty stellar rest of the season. So it was a good pickup. Pretty good pickup at that point. My worst drops, I dropped Jordan Binnington twice, and by the same virtue that Stuart Skinner was a good pickup, Binnington was a pretty bad drop because he just had volume all season long, was actually pretty good with it. So yeah, I probably could have just ridden Skinner and Binnington as pickups for the entire season and never thought about my goaltenders ever again, and that probably would have been the best thing that I could have done with my goaltending situation in this league in particular. I did drop Matt Duchene on November 12th. And then, like I said, I put in a $16 waiver on him on December 4th when somebody else who had picked him up dropped him. And then I held on to him after that, thankfully. But I did drop Nazem Kadri. I did pick Nazem Kadri, actually 156th overall, so pretty late. I dropped him on December 6th. I don't remember the particulars, but I'm assuming he was in a bit of a cold stretch at that point. But he definitely heated up after that fact and had a pretty solid season overall. So definitely regretting that one. In terms of trades, I traded a few different times here. So kind of the reverse of last season's situation when it became apparent to me that, you know, I wasn't really going to be able to contend with the top teams in this league in particular. Blake had a really good team and Reese's Pieces had a really good team. They were just far and above the best teams in terms of points for, and I didn't really feel like I was going to have a really strong chance to compete with those two teams, even if I did make the playoffs. And so I decided to kind of start trading away my assets and just look towards the future. So I traded Mika Zibanejad and a round 14 pick to Blake for Thomas Hertl and a round 15 pick. And I traded Brad Marchand and a round 17 pick to Reese's Pieces for Parayko and a round 6 pick. And then I traded Brock Besser and Brandon Montour plus my round 11 and 12 picks to Mark Barber at 18 Skaters for Riley Smith, Aaron Ekblad, and then his round 6 and round 7 picks next year. So yeah, in the end, traded away Zibanejad, Marchand, Besser, and Montour. And picked up an extra round 5 pick for next year, 2 extra round 6 picks for next year, and an extra round 7 pick while trading away round 11, 12, 14, and 17 picks. So later picks, basically just moving my picks up a lot. I should have a pretty strong complement of picks overall to work with for next year. And hopefully I can kind of stack up my lineup pretty well for next year with those picks. So, yeah, I've said this before, but I do think this is kind of the optimal way to play it in a keeper league like this. I do think that the best way, if you ever in a keeper league kind of have this situation where you feel like you're falling out of it and you're not going to be there at the end of it all, which was my situation in this league, I just think that probably the best thing to do is to trade away and get picks for next year if you can. If you got an active league like this one is, then you should be able to do so. So that's what I did. Blake will tell you his side of the Zibanejad Hertl round 5, round 14 swap when we get to his portion on his team for the Experts League. But yeah, that's how this season went for me in the Experts League. We have welcomed Blake back to the program. Blake, you want to let the people know what's going on your end? Are you in any danger at this point?
No, but buddy, this stinks. Oh God. I mean, bad internet is like the worst first world problem, isn't it? Like, it's the first world problem. It's like my internet connection stinks. Like, oh, poor me. But it does suck. It's annoying. I mean, what the hell? Like, this took me like 15 minutes. Anywho, yeah, it's nice to be here. Let's carry on. Hopefully you've been, just singing my praises about the Experts League there. Have you, Nate? Is that what's
I did mention that your team had a pretty good record in the Experts League. So I'm sure you'll gloat plenty enough when it comes to your turn. So I'll save the rest for that point.
Oh, nice.
So next league that I want to touch on here, Kakupfel. So this is tier 3 in Kakupfel, the Binghamton division. This is a 14-team league, head-to-head points. In terms of anybody you might know, if you're listening to this, Shams from Short Shifts from the Keeping Carlson feed, he was in this league. So, you might know him if you listen to a bunch of fantasy hockey pods. In this league, I did win the championship. I was third in regular season points for, finished second with a bye in that league in terms of the overall standings. In the draft, my best picks, Kyle Makar at 13, I thought, ended up being a really, really good pick. If you look at Kakupfel points per game, he was like 0.25 points per game above Roman Josi, who is the next highest, which is a pretty significant difference overall. And then Roman Josi was like 0.4 points above the next player. So Josi and Makar were a clear tier up, and Makar was almost a tier up on Josi. So I felt really good about Makar at 13. I think he was well worth that price in this draft. I got Travis Konecny at 83 in this draft. I got Brock Nelson at 114. And I got Brian Rust at 170 in this draft. And all those guys played pretty well for me. My worst picks, I took Tage Thompson at 16 in this draft. That obviously didn't work out too well until the playoffs when he absolutely went off and helped me win. So it was terrible until it wasn't, I guess. Had to make it without him basically all season long, but once I made it, it was pretty sweet. So that was my experience with the Tage Thompson ride in this league. Chris Letang at 86. I don't think this was a terrible pick if you look at where he finished in terms of the end of season ranks and the points per game. He actually finished pretty well, but there's probably better uses I could have made of a seventh round pick in this league. So yeah, I'll put in Letang there. Overall, though, like, I really think that this draft was just kind of solid top to bottom. I didn't, you know, step outside and make any wild takes. And pretty much all of my top end picks hit to some extent, aside from Tage Thompson, who's obviously the biggest disappointment. But, you know, I had Stamkos, I had Fiala, I had Boldy, Konecny, as I mentioned. Letang was still halfway decent. Yeah, I took Brandon Montour in the eighth round, 111th overall. That was probably fine in the end. It wasn't great. Maybe it was a little bit high for where he ranked end of season, but I think it was fine. Basically, I just didn't shoot myself in the foot with this draft. So that's a very underrated part of drafting, in my opinion, is avoiding mistakes, especially in the top, I don't know, 5 to 7 rounds. If you can avoid major mistakes in those rounds, you're probably going to be there when all is tallied up at the end of the season. So I felt like I was able to do that pretty well with this draft, with the biggest exception being Tage Thompson. My best ads, I put in a $1 waiver claim on Logan Thompson right before week 24, which was the week where he started like all the games and like absolutely went off. He had a shutout in there. And two other managers put in waiver claims for him, but $0 waiver claims. So I got Logan Thompson. I got all those points. So that was pretty stellar. Matthias Ekholm I picked up February 23rd in this league. Shane Pinto I picked up February 12th. And I actually wanted to make the point that I still count Pinto as one of the better ads that I made this year because it was part of the process, right? The underlings were looking really good when he came back. He was getting good deployment at the time as well. And I really think that one of the things that I want to stress is that a really good ad is a player who's playing well at the moment that you can foresee being a part of your lineup for the next little while, has a good schedule moving forward. You pick them up and then you don't get attached to them. You let them play out the string. And when they start to trend south again, you let them go, which is exactly what I did with Shane Pinto. I don't know if you had any similar experiences on your teams with anything, Blake, but that was one that I really wanted to drive home. As I was looking through this, I was like, yeah, there's some of these guys that they didn't last on my team, but they were really valuable to me when I did pick them up. And it was important to my team's overall success that I had these moments throughout the season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like playing with the house's money. Right? I mean, it's just a great way to think of it. It's like you didn't lose anything by picking up Shane Pinto. And you said something last season in one of your episodes, like I think it was, yeah, takeaways. And it's one of the things is like splitting the season up in segments, right? That's really important. Yeah. So yeah, you get Shane Pinto in there when he's flying. And then once he stops, like you got him for nothing. So kick him to the curb and don't even think about it again. So I really like that.
Yep. Couple more that I'll throw in there. You know, I had a $21 waiver that I got Alexis Lafreniere on January 2nd for, ended up holding him for the rest of the season. He obviously had a huge playoffs as well. Good schedule. Everything worked out really well with Lafreniere. Joey Decord, again, similar story. Picked him up December 14th. He was terrific for a couple months and then kicked him to the curb when he started to decline when Grubauer came back and started taking away his starts. So, yeah, didn't feel like there was any skin off my back, but he was terrific for a good stretch of the season. A big part of my team for that stretch. I put a $7 waiver claim on Connor Ingram, November 20th. Again, similar story for 2-3 months. Connor Ingram was a big part of my team. He played terrific. And then when he started splitting again with Vejmelka and his play started slipping, again, just kicked him to the curb. Didn't feel bad about it. That is 0G. And then Quentin Byfield, November 5th. I did end up dropping Quentin Byfield, I believe, in the playoffs. But he was a decent part of my team. And in a 14-team league, to find somebody on the waiver wires on November 5th who lasts on your team the whole year pretty much is actually a pretty big deal. So I threw that one in there. My worst drops, there were a few. So, yeah, that's another thing I think that I want to kind of drive home here with some of these is, like, even on these teams where I did win, like, it doesn't mean that every decision I made all season long was perfect. I feel like a lot of people beat themselves up. They have a bad stretch. They lose three matchups in a row and they're like, there's no way I can climb out of this. I've made too many mistakes. Like, I'm terrible at this. Like, that's not the case. Everybody makes mistakes. I make mistakes even in the leagues that I won this year. I definitely made a lot of mistakes. I could have played better. I could have, you know, maybe foreseen things differently. In some cases, like, I don't think I made a wrong decision, like, by the process. It just turned out that the players, you know, immediately got promoted to a different line or something along those lines. So I dropped Bertuzzi, Tyler Bertuzzi. I did it again. Tyler Bertuzzi.
You should have kept him, Nate. Come on.
Yeah, that was right before the Max Domi, Tyler Bertuzzi, Austin Matthews line got created, and they absolutely blew up. I dropped Arturi Lehkonen January 29th. He popped off on the top line shortly thereafter, but he had a two-game week that week. I distinctly remember kind of thinking to myself, what am I missing or gaining here with Lehkonen? I honestly don't know how I feel about that one still. How do you feel about that, Blake? Like, I dropped him because it was a two-game week. Even if I kept him, like, I would have kept him for probably, I think it was like a pretty solid stretch, maybe 3 weeks to a month where he was getting some pretty good deployment. And then he got booted down again. And then I feel like a lot of people hung on to him too long when he was actively hurting their lineups. So mm-hmm. How do you feel about that kind of move where, you know, a lot of people say, oh, he dropped Lehkonen and he went off. That was a terrible drop. But in the aggregate, like, was it the wrong move to drop him for a two-game week back then?
You won. You won the championship. So hell no, buddy. I mean, yeah, like, could have, would have, should have, for sure. Right. And there are going to be so many decisions like that we make throughout the year. And the thing that we try and do here at Apples and Genos is just put things on your side, right? Give you, so you can make informed decisions. And that decision made absolute sense, I'm sure, to you when you did it, even though you didn't listen to me. All right. That you should keep Lehkonen on your team. All right. Because he popped off. I'm still really big on that player. I love Lecky, but yeah, I mean, it made total sense and you won. So proof is in the pudding, folks.
Yep. Charlie Lindgren, I dropped on December 17th. Shortly thereafter, he kind of took over as the true starter in Washington and actually got a lot of volume and was pretty valuable for fantasy purposes. Noah Hanifin, I had early on. I dropped him November 2nd, so I barely had him on the team. He ended up having a pretty solid fantasy season. Overall, the Flames started to feature him on the top power play to try to get the trade done, which they eventually did. So yeah, I don't know how I feel about that one. Hanifin has always kind of been a more interchangeable part, but he ended up having a pretty solid season this year. Similarly, I had Brock Faber on my team for a short stint, literally dropped him before November started. So he wasn't doing anything at that point, but obviously it would have been nice to have Faber for his big stretch where he was absolutely one of the hottest defensemen in the league for a solid month or so. So that's my worst drops from the team. Yeah, just another note actually on Lindgren. Like, a lot of people are like, you got to hit on all the perfect goaltenders for 0G to work. Like, I did not hit on all the perfect goaltenders. Like, even the guys that I did hit on, Ingram and Decord, throughout the season, I dropped them before the finals. Like, they didn't win me my league. Those weren't the guys that brought me to the finish line. It was Logan Thompson in the last week that I picked up. That was really a big part of it. And then it was just volume guys after that. So yeah, I dropped Lindgren on December 17th. Like, I missed on that one. You really don't have to bat 1,000 to really get ahead with 0G. And I think that's a misnomer that a lot of people put out there, is that you actually have to be really good at picking goaltenders for this to work. And I really don't think that's the case. I don't think that there's some like secret sauce to this that's making it work. I think you just have to be attentive and be on situations that might work out. And if they continue to work out, you continue to roster the goaltender, and that's really all it is. And then just trades. I did make one trade in this league. I traded Kevin Fiala and Braden McNabb for Alex Ovechkin and Cam York on December 17th. Overall, I think that actually ended up being a net negative to me. Fiala actually had a pretty good back end of the season, and Ovechkin did have a really hot stretch at the end, which helped me in the playoff run for sure. But up until that point, he was not super hot. So I think Fiala, in terms of total points, did outplay him. Ovechkin's schedule, though, I will say, in the fantasy playoffs was pretty helpful. So that part did help me out. So overall, I think maybe I'd call it a wash. However you want to look at that is fine, I guess, in the end. But yeah, interesting trade to look back on for sure. All right, I'm going to keep rolling through here. The Fantasy Puck Content Creators League. This is a 12-team head-to-head points league. We had two guys from Fantasy Puck in there. Josh was in there. Jared from Fired Up Fantasy. Fantasy Tipped was in there. Ian Gooding's in there. Data Draft. Victor Nuno's in there. Chris Wassel's in there. So lots of people that you probably know if you're tuned in to fantasy hockey. And I won the championship in this league as well. Finished first in the league in the standings, second in points four. In the draft, my best picks, I picked JT Miller at 23. He ended up finishing top 10 in this league. Jake Gensel at 47. I picked Phil Forsberg at 95. Mike Matheson at 119. All really good picks there. My worst picks, Dougie Hamilton at 26, obviously with the injury, but he had already lost the top power play to Luke Hughes, so that was trending poorly already. And Chris Letang at 71. Probably could have done a little better there. It didn't sink me by any stretch, but probably could have done better with that pick overall. In terms of the ads here, I added Alexis Lafreniere right before playoffs, actually in the playoffs, March 30th, with an extra ad from the prior week. So that was really key for my final week in this league. I picked up Charlie Lindgren March 11th. I picked up Frederik Andersen actually March 10th. A lot of people think that's kind of crazy, but Carolina did have a bunch of three-game schedules, and they are very clearly just alternating Kachukov and Andersen, so it didn't make sense for people in the playoffs to be rostering Andersen if he was only going to get them the one game played, and so it made sense that he was out there. And again, this is the power of having a bye. If you have a bye, you can be the person who has the first access when somebody drops a goaltender on a good team like this, and you can get in there and you can grab them up. Or any player, really. Doesn't have to be a goaltender. Gabe Vilardi I picked up February 19th. Joey Decord in this league as well back on December 18th. Played a few good months for me before I dropped him. Worst drops, Tyler Bertuzzi shows up again March 11th. I dropped him. Luke Hughes I had in this league and dropped February 14th, and he closed out the season really strong after that. Matthias Ekholm I dropped back on January 22nd. It took maybe a month or so after that, but he did obviously have a really hot end to the season. I mean, I had Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen back in November, dropped him November 20th. It took a while for him to get going too, but obviously he was a great 0G goaltender in the kind of second half of the season. In this one, I had Nikolai Ehlers November 3rd. I dropped him early on in the season. He was getting absolutely no minutes. It was a big deal. Really didn't start to get any minutes until Vilardi got injured, actually. And so I've talked about this before, but I kind of feel like even though Ehlers ended up having a great season overall, like he was definitely like an above replacement level player. Like I think people would say that on the season, you're happy to have rostered him. I don't know that I feel like it was a terrible move to drop him at the time. You know, if the Vilardi injury hadn't happened, how long would it have taken him to really get more minutes or to get the kind of scoring going that he eventually did? I don't know. Yeah, altogether, I don't know that it was a terrible move. And I've talked about too, like while you're waiting for somebody to pop off, there's like a sunk cost fallacy there, right? Like I can't drop this guy because I know he's good and I know it's going to happen. But if it doesn't happen for a month, you've wasted a month of having a negative player on your team when you could have been rostering somebody who's helping you. And maybe, you know, adding a guy who sticks on your lineup for the whole year and ends up being a really key pickup. So I don't know if you got any thoughts on that, Blake, if that's something you've seen as well, but there is something something to this, even when it's a guy that we expect to turn around at some point, if they're not getting deployment, especially, is where it's really hard to just keep banking that, you know, the coach is going to see it with this guy. He's going to see what we see in the stats and he's going to start playing him. Sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. And there's situational awareness there too. Like it all depends where you are in your league, right? Like if you're popping off and you're first place or you're in the top third and you got Nikolai Ehlers who's dinking around on your lineup, but you're loving the underlying metrics and you think there's a chance, like, yeah, I definitely hold on to players like that. But I have no problem too. Like when I, you know, and I'll get into it with some of my drops too, is like, okay, you're not playing and I'm kind of in a hunt for like the playoffs here, I need to win, like you're gone, no problem. So yeah, it's kind of depends where you are in your league too.
Yeah. All right. Last one for me, the Appleton Genos Patron League. This is a 12 team head-to-head bangers cats league. Josh was in this one as well. We have Craig from the fancy, the five hole taxi squad, sorry. And Nimmer is in here as well. He's a tier one Kakuffle competitor, went to the playoffs in tier one, of Kakuffle this year, so he'll be back in tier one and I'll meet him there next year. So definitely some names in this league as well. In this league, I did win the championship here as well, fourth in the regular season. In this one, in the draft, my best picks, I had Jake Gensel in this one as well at 46. I picked Forsberg at 51. I picked Brian Rust at 147. And I picked Braden McNabb at 195. I really do think that one of the more underrated things to do in a Bangers Cats League is to identify some key Bangers defensemen late who are going to fill up those categories for you and just use those late picks that are basically dart throws anyway and just get some of these really elite level hits block specialists like a guy like Braden McNabb is. McNabb ended up staying on my team for most of the season and being a really key part of it. My worst picks, Patrick Laine, I took at 75. I think we all know how his season went. Jacob Chychrun at 94 ended up not being worth that level of draft capital. And then Alexander Georgiev in the 10th round at pick 118, 897 save percentage. So I don't think
he felt like such a win. Hey, like, oh my God.
Yeah. Felt like I couldn't pass him up there in a cats league like this, but yeah, I don't know that it was worth it in the end. So yeah, best ads April 1st, I picked up Alexis Lafreniere again. Just for that last week, and he absolutely popped off. Matthias Ekholm, I picked up in this league March 24th. Did have a terrific week there for me as well. Pavel Buchnevich, way back October 31st, he had a really, really slow start to the season, and he was dropped in this league, and I picked up Buchnevich then and carried him through the entire season, so that was a good one. My worst drops, I dropped Nick Schmaltz on March 26th, then he promptly scored 6 points in his next three games, so that was pretty sweet. Would have obviously helped in my finals matchup there. And again, I had Tyler Bertuzzi and dropped him on March 10th in this league, and I had Wyatt Johnston in this league as well and dropped him January 22nd, like right before he absolutely took off. So that one doesn't feel good either. Didn't make any trades in this one either. I do want to go back to the goaltenders in this one. So I picked Georgiev in the 10th round and I picked Andrei Vasilevsky in the 12th. If you remember, there was a lot of uncertainty about his injury and when he would be back. There was some talk that it would be like 3 months before he'd be back. Ended up being a lot less than that. So it seemed like a big steal. Neither of these guys had really good seasons. Georgiev in particular had a pretty terrible season. He did get me a lot of wins, like Colorado will definitely do that for you. And he did play a lot of games, so he got me a lot of saves. But yeah, I think it's just kind of ironic. And yeah, just 0G, folks. Like, what else am I going to say? Georgiev in the 10th, like, people were like, this is a clown league. You shouldn't be playing in this league. And what do we really know? He ended up having an 897 save percentage on one of the best teams in the entire league. So yeah, all that to say, I just don't think you need to be hammering goaltenders. I do think that volume guys in cats leagues like this are pretty important, and so I'd be looking for a volume guy, but you don't have to pay up for one of the top five goaltenders to be getting a volume guy. You can definitely find other guys than just that. So Yeah, that's my kind of takeaway. I don't know. Do you have any similar takes? What do you think about these Cats League goaltenders? And do you think, like, if you're in my position, like if this happens to you next year, Blake, and you're staring down like a top five goaltender and it's like the eighth, ninth, tenth round, are you feeling like you have to pull the trigger at that point?
I mean, it always depends on who's around him as well. But I mean, going into this season, Georgiev at 118, I mean, that seems like a smash, right? Going in. And I think, yeah, that must have felt weird for you too, because you're like, this is not normally what I do. But I mean, we know this team is going to be good. And it's hard to predict what happened with Georgiev this season, right? So I think, like, and I'll talk a little bit about it in mine as well, but yeah, Cats Leagues and goalies, I think there's something there that it's like a little adaptation to zero G that we need to sort of identify. And like, it doesn't mean you draft them sooner, but it's a certain type of goalie you may be looking for, right? That's going to help you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I think that's definitely a topic we can dive into this off season for sure. So major takeaways for me, just two really, zero G without exception is going to be the first one. Like, I'll spoil it right here on the air. I'm going into Kakuffle tier one next year. I'm going to be doing an auction draft. I'm going to take two goaltenders. Most likely I'm going to spend a total of two auction dollars on those two goaltenders.
Yeah, like, love that.
I just don't see the value. I look across all these leagues. Like, I did hold Georgiev all year. It's debatable whether I even should have, to be quite honest with you. I did hold Vasilevsky all year. Again, there were stretches where he was actively hurting my team, where I wished that I could drop him, but I felt like I couldn't. And that's exactly what I tell people not to do with goaltenders, right? Don't put yourself in these situations. If I go across all my other teams, like here, I'll read out the other goaltenders that I drafted. I've drafted Philip Grubauer and Jonas Korpisalo in the Fantasy Puck League, dropped both of them. I drafted Philip Grubauer and Logan Thompson in Kakuffle, and I dropped both of them. And in the Experts League, I drafted Devin Levi and Ville Husso and pretty clearly dropped both of them. So why am I spending anything on these goaltenders if I know that I'm just going to drop them anyway? Like, why don't I take the lowest common denominator and just start going after whoever's out there as soon as waivers open, whoever's getting starts, whoever's the first upstart goaltender. Yeah, I just don't feel beholden to goaltenders whatsoever. So zero G to the end, it's the way to go. I think I'm like even more zero G now after this season than I was coming into the season, at least in the way that most people view it. Like, I don't think my general perception has really changed, but like, just looking back, like there's so little reason, like aside from like, you know, week one, like the starting day, having a starting goaltender on opening day, so you know you're going to get like three starts that opening week, like maybe that's of some value to you. But aside from that, like, I just don't feel like I have to be taking goaltenders early whatsoever. I know I'm not the first to have faded goaltenders in leagues. I say that constantly on this podcast. People always want to call me out and say, you're not the first to fade goaltenders. I'm well aware. I gave it a name, and I've developed a lot of strategy around how to proceed with goaltenders, both in the draft and throughout the season. That's what zero G is to me. It's not just fading goaltenders. It's a whole system and strategy around how to proceed at the goaltender position. But if anything, this season has definitely redoubled my intent as far as next season goes. And one other thing I do want to say here is, across all of my leagues, I made the most moves of anyone in every single one of my leagues. There was one or two, I forget exactly, where I was tied with someone else, but I used every single ad in every single league all year basically across the board. And I do think that that's absolutely paramount. I think there's so few situations in which not using an ad is the optimal solution. Like, that's probably like a 0.1% occurrence. So absolutely use every single move all the time, everything everywhere all at once when it comes to making the most of your moves.
Great movie.
You got anything to add there, Blake?
Yeah, it's just this is interesting to hear you talk about, especially those goalies, because that's like a zero-G case study for you, right? Because normally you would never have a goalie that has that name, right? And that's one of those things, like you had Georgiev and Vasilevsky, that's one of those things about zero-G that you just avoid because you don't have those guys. And then that feeling like you have to keep them because of the potential of what they're going to do, right? You can get that out of your mind and just focus on what they actually are doing and be like, no, get the hell out of here, right? And then, like you said, you don't have to smash it. You can drop a guy, pick up another guy, just but I love that you're doubling down, and I'm doubling down too, buddy. Like, I had a very interesting year this year with zero G, and I'll get into that, but I'm with you, man. It's the way, there's no doubt in my mind.
All right, Blake. Why don't you take us in and tell us about your teams?
All right, let's do the thing. So yeah, I played in two of the leagues that Nate already talked about. So that's going to be helpful. I do want to talk about my Kakupfel team. Just overall, I played 5 head-to-head leagues, 2 points leagues, all on Yahoo. Then I played 2 dynasty leagues on Fantrax as well. Plus I had a little, like a bunch of best ball leagues and some other little things like that, right? That I'm not really talking on here, but my main focuses were my Yahoo leagues, my head-to-head leagues. That's what I was doing. So anyways, I'm going to talk about my Kakupfel team. I'm going to talk about the Experts League, and I'm going to talk about the A&G Listener League as well. So let's get the biz. We got to get in there. So I'll start with my Kakupfel team. I was in Tier 7. This is my second year playing Kakupfel. I didn't make the playoffs last year. I placed 9th in my division. But I led the division in points, and history has repeated itself, folks. I didn't make the playoffs again this year. I was in Tier 7. I moved up because of my point total, I believe. My record was 10-12, which is good, but I took a lot of bad beats. I looked into some of my losses. Like I would have a good week. It's just my opponent would have a better week. So there's some things that were out of my control there. And 4 of those losses, like a couple losses, they were under 10 points. And 2 of those were under 4. Ouch. So that's brutal. You know, that's like, you know, we're literally talking like a couple shots, a block, like whatever, you know, like getting really granular with it. So that's really hard to take. But anyways, yeah, like Kakupfel, as Nate said, it's a 14 team head to head points league. 14 teamers, an interesting thing there. I do like playing these 14 teamers and 16 teamers because, yeah, you're just stretched so thin and your strategy becomes even more important, right? And the waiver wire becomes even more important. So there's a nice element of strategy there. That said, I didn't make the damn playoffs. My God. Anyways, I finished 7th. But again, 2nd in the regular season in points 4 in my Kakupfel division and really close to 1st. So that's fine. Let's talk about my draft here. I felt great about my draft after Kakupfel. Like I felt really, really good. I remember sending you and Josh and Vinci like pictures of my team and you guys were like,
yeah.
Wow, that's pretty nice. Like you got so-and-so at this pick and so-and-so at this pick. It's like, yeah, I did. All right. And yeah, look where it got me. But anyways, so some of my best picks here, I picked the Sex Panther, Sam Reinhardt. I basically got him everywhere, which was awesome. But I certainly didn't predict that he was going to, you know, get 55 goals and, you know, just pop off the way he is. I had him for like a point per game. But anyways, I got him at 79. He finished 11th overall in a couple scoring. So that's a massive dub. I did pick up Valery Nichushkin, Machine Gun Valley. I got him at 90th, you know, and before he got injured, he was popping the hell off. Like this guy was red hot. He did finish at 156, but that's not indicative of what he was doing as a player. So I think that pick was really good. I picked Brock Besser at 191. He finished at 51. Good God. Thank you, Brock, for your service. I called him a 30-30 guy this year. No, how about a 40-30 guy? I love that. Thank you, Brock. And then I got Drake Batherson, where that was a pick that Nate didn't like of his because he got him a little earlier. I got him at 107, which, you know, that's not too shabby for me. He had a nice little end to the year. So I did like that pick at that value there. For me, my worst picks of this draft, I had pick 9 and I picked Jason Robertson. And I thought I was being safe. I thought that was a nice safe pick. What, you know, with some upside because of what Robertson was able to do last season with his metrics, with the Dallas power play and how they were going off. And it didn't really materialize. Like I picked him at 9. He finished at 30 in Kakupfel scoring. So it's still a valuable piece. But when you pick a guy in the first round, you want him to finish around the first round, right? Yeah. Like we're dropping down 2 rounds there with my first pick. And that's just not a good place to be, in my opinion, right? And I don't know. It's going to Jason Robertson next season is going to be interesting because Dallas has such balanced scoring, and you got a guy like Wyatt Johnston coming up here who's going to, you know, maybe take some touches away. I don't know if he gets on that top line, maybe bumps Pavelski out of there. I don't know. That would be great for Wyatt Johnston and probably for Robertson too, but I could see a better season for Robertson next season, but who knows? We'll have to see what's what. I also picked up the cat, Alex DeBrincat, at 34. And I at the beginning of the season, the first third of the season, I was like, this is a slam dunk. Look at me, everybody. Oh, yeah, Alex DeBrincat. But, you know, he was a constant guy on my sell high show because of he was redlining in every single metric. It didn't make sense. And, yeah, eventually the wheels did fall off. And he finished at 70, so it's not terrible. But, you know, I didn't get the value. Like, you know, my third overall pick, there was probably a lot better players that I could have got there that would have given me some, you know, some reasonable production there. So, and then I did pick Jakub Vrána. You and I were both on Vrána this season. I thought there was a legit opportunity for him to get in the top six and top power play there in St. Louis. And, you know, it's just something with the player. I think like he's, this has happened at every stage of his career or every professional team that he's played with. He's kind of getting this treatment. So I don't know. That's a guy that is basically I'm hands off until I see some real consistency there, but he's a good metrics guy. Anywho. Yeah. So but I really liked my draft. I thought it was really good. Yeah. I mean, my goalies, I picked Jacob Markstrom at 146. I picked Elvis Merzlikens at 219. So I went 0G here. Markstrom, I kept all year. Merzlikens, I ended up dropping and I picked up a bunch of other guys. So let's talk about my ads. I think I made some good ones again. You know, you and I were both on Matthias Ekholm this season and he just had a great one, right? So I added him and kept him for the rest of the season on December 4th and he finished 135th in Kakupfel scoring. So that's great. Blake, the Snake Coleman. Yo, I got him December 11th, held him for most of the season. That guy finished 77th, right? And I had him right through section of the season where he was like popping the hell off. So, you know, I got a lot of love for Blake Coleman. He helped me a lot in that kind of that middle section of my season here. I did get Joey Decord. I had him December 18th and I held him for most of the season, but yeah, I did. He became expendable to me well before, you know, Grubauer came back. I think I had some other plans and got some other guys in there, but he definitely solidified that position for me. And I did get that run for Joey Decord with my Kakupfel team. So I like that. What else? Luke Hughes, I picked up December 29th. He was pissing me off all season, doing just enough to stay on my team. But, you know, I held him rest of the season. He finished 237th. Like, you know, he's a power play one quarterback and a 14 teamer. That makes absolute sense. You get that guy on your team and you just live with the production. So that's where I was at with that. Worst drops. I mean, I drafted Owen Tippett in this league. I drafted him 135th and I dropped him like he was lukewarm. What up? Just no respect for this shot monster, this beefer. I dropped him early, October 13th. I was like, no, because I think it was after the first week, Torts was giving him the Torts treatment. Like, oh, here's 12 minutes, Owen Tippett. I'm like, I'm not here for this. Get the hell off my team. I can figure something out here. But obviously, that's not the way that it ended. Like, Owen Tippett finished 55th in Kakupfel scoring. Yeah. So that's not great for me. Gus Nyquist, I had a couple times during the year, but I ended up dropping him finally on November 30th. And someone else picked him up. He finished 80th. So that's a bit of an L there. And I had Connor Ingram on my team prior to him sort of popping off with all those shutouts and that great stretch of play. I really could have used that, right? He finished 200th, but that doesn't really tell a story about what Ingram was actually able to do. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is, right? I feel I'm right in line with a lot of the stuff that you said there, Nate, just about kind of cutting it in sections here. And yeah, you just do the best you can for each segment and you don't worry about it. Like I talk to so many fantasy managers, like in the DMs or whatever else, and they're so choked, like, oh, I dropped this guy. I should have picked up this guy. It's like, who cares? Like, what are you doing next? Like, let's focus on what we're doing now. And like, let's get going here. Right. Cause we can't really look back. I mean, it would be a nice exercise and probably painful actually. Be like, oh God, no, I could have won. I could have been in the playoffs, but yeah, forget that. All right. Let's move forward. But anyways, trades, this is something that you and I are pretty different at. Cause I'm a big trade guy. I like trying to not fleece other managers, but to find value. That's why I do the buy low, sell high show and cream of the crop, is because I feel like I have a good finger on the pulse there. We both do, I think, and Josh as well. Like I want buy lows on my team when I feel like they're going to start popping off. And I made some good ones. I made the only two trades in our division, and they were both pretty monstrous. First one I made on December 21st, I traded Brock Besser and Jason Robertson for Kirill the Thrill Kaprasov and Carter Swaggy Verhage. So to me, that's a big dub. I think that's a net positive at this point. Like, risky bisky for sure, but it worked out. Cap at the time was underachieving massively. Mm-hmm. So was Matt Boldy, right? The whole Minnesota team. But we know what Cap's done here. Like, he did Cap things. Like, he's back on the point pace that we sort of predicted, Nate. So that's one thing that's really neat. When Nate and I go through our projections and stuff, we're going to do an episode on that. Like, there was a lot of guys I wasn't feeling good about, but you know, even just this last like month of the season, they're starting to pop off and get those numbers back up to where I feel good about it. And Cap is one of those guys. Like, I think he's on like a 97 point pace or something like that. I had him for 104. You had him for over 100, I think. Like, this guy's a beauty. I love Kirill Kaprasov. And then Carter Verhage, he finished Cap finished at 8, whereas Jason Robertson finished at 30th, like I said. So that's a win for me. Verhage finished at 52. Brock finished at 51. Verhage would have beat Brock Besser if he would have been healthy for the end of the season. There's no question there. So yeah, that's a win for me, I think. So yeah, I feel good about that. What else I got to say? The other trade I made was John Tavares for Tage Thompson. I was in on Tage too. And you know, when I traded Tavares, it was before he was a buy low. It was while he was still like popping off with his metrics and kind of chipping away with point per game pace. And then he sort of went cold. Like, right after I traded him, he went real cold. And Tage was just cold. He just stayed cold for a long periods, except for the playoffs, which he popped off, which I wasn't in. So, but he did help me to a cool 7th place finish. Thank you, Tage, for your service. Oh God, Tage, what are you doing? I'm all over this player next season, though, by the way. I know. How are you feeling about Tage next season? I know we've talked a little bit about this player.
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see how the fantasy hockey community values Tage Thompson. Because I really do think that he's got all the infinitely high ceiling, basically, as a talent. It's really going to come down to what the price to acquire is. Because if people are just box score scouting and they're looking at a guy who's got 56 points in 70 games, and they're like, I'm not going to buy on that guy until the 6th round, then by all means, get me in there in the 4th round, I think, for sure, and probably sooner. I mean it's so hard to find that kind of league altering upside that I think it's a swing that I want to make. I just spent a bunch of time talking about how I don't want to make mistakes in the early part of my draft, but I just feel like this is like maybe last year was about as good as the season could have gone for Tage, but maybe this year is literally as bad as it could have gone for him. And so even if it's somewhere in the middle, I just think that there's a lot of skin left on the bone here. And I would be pretty shocked personally if he wasn't at least somewhere in like the 75 to 80 point range again next year. I'll get into it more once I am able to dig in on projections and get through all that and see what, obviously, if the Sabres do something this offseason. Paterka coming up and being a big time producer over the back end, that feels good as somebody who can help raise Thompson's floor if he has somebody to work with. I just think in the end I'm going to be in on a player who I think has all the talent in the world, whose metrics have been otherworldly at times.
We got to get this man some minutes. I mean, Mr. Granato, please. I mean, geez, I've written you letters. I've emailed you. No response whatsoever. Very rude. But, that's fine. But yeah, 20-minute Tage. Imagine if that happened. I mean, imagine. Just imagine, folks. Tage in the 4th round. Yes, please. Oh my God. So I'm into Tage next season. Anyways, I like that trade. I was making a trade for a schedule kind of play. And it would have worked out, I think. But did get a chance. That's fine. So big takeaways in this league. Like, you know, first off, I was first overall in moves. Just as you said, Nate, like I'm like you, I think you got a stream. Like, there's no reason you should be leaving moves on the table. You can always do something. So, you just gotta be thinking ahead. If you got a move left on Sunday and you don't need it for your matchup, you use it for the next week and you do that. Right. So, my thing about Kakupfel though, which I know is not a weakness of mine, but just an area that needs to be shored up, is like my streaming. I think that especially in Kakuffle, I felt like I was battling in a lot of matches. Like I'd set my lines, my active players, and then I'd see a games played mismatch. Like they'd have more games played than me, and I'd get like concerned about that. So sometimes on the Monday morning, I would make like three moves. So three of my four moves, I would make good pickups, but like, you know, you're really handcuffing yourself a little bit. You're not like, and I felt that in a few matchups where I was like, man, I wish I had a couple more moves because things happen throughout the week. You know, yeah. You need to be able to pivot. And I think the adjustment I'm going to make moving forward next year is just slow roll a little bit, like two moves maximum on Monday, really, unless you're, you know, really battling or there's like must add players that you got to get on your team and maybe you can take an L in a week. Like, but I think just as an overall strategy, I think I'm going to be looking at doing maybe two moves maximum because yeah, I found myself maxed out of four moves and it's already Saturday and it's, you just have no control. Right. And then yeah. whatever the other guy does, like picks up a hot goalie or someone gets injured, he picks him up. And then that's your, like I said, I had a lot of close losses and maybe if I had some moves, I would have been able to absorb those points and do a little bit better. Right. So yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Nate?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I don't know that I've ever really, you know, like consciously defined this for myself, but I can probably count on one hand the number of times that I made three moves on a Monday across my four leagues this entire season. So it's definitely not something I'm trying to do. I do like it. If I'm looking at my lineup and thinking that I need to make three moves, I'm looking really hard and thinking about whether I really need to make those moves or if it's something that I can stomach or, you know, maybe hold this guy. He's got a game on Tuesday, but I can hold him past then. And then maybe I'll drop him after that game and add somebody for Wednesday and beyond. There's so much that happens, you know, especially if your league has some decent flexibility with IR spots and somebody's going to get injured. Somebody's going to get moved around. You can move somebody around. Sometimes players get moved around IR plus on and off IR plus and actually works out really well in your favor. Sometimes a guy who's only going to play two games that week gets moved on to IR plus or gets moved on to IR plus after his first game of the week. He doesn't play for 3 days. And so you can actually, if you have the ads available to you, you can actually pick up somebody who's got a back-to-back and you can sneak an extra two games midweek. And it actually ends up being a really big boon for your team on the overall week. But you can't do that if you're handcuffing yourself by using three ads on a Monday. And so it is something that I really try to avoid. One to two moves every Monday is pretty much what I'm doing almost without question throughout every Monday of the season, basically. So yeah, I definitely feel that. Not really something that I'd really consciously put out there or probably even talked about on the podcast, but definitely something that I am doing for myself.
Yeah, and it's just a good point. And to me, it's just a little adjustment. Like it wasn't every week, but the weeks where I did that, those were hard weeks, right? They were really like, I don't like feeling out of control, and that's kind of what you're doing, right? You're handing your control away. So I don't want to do that, and I'm not going to do that next season. I'll be damned if I'm going to lose a bunch of these matchups by like 4 points. What the hell? All right, let's move on. I'll talk about another league here, the Experts League that Nate already mentioned, that I was in with him and a bunch of other beauties. It's Keep 3 Points League. I finished second overall. Oh yeah. Oh God, it was terrible. All right. That was very soul crushing, but I'll get into that. But I did have the best regular season record. Shout out to me, low-key brag at 17-5. All right. My team was a wagon. All right. It was amazing, but you know, not good enough apparently. And I'll let you know why. So this was a league that was already established. So you guys played it 1 year prior. Is that right, Nate? Yeah. So, a team dropped out. I jumped on the team cause I wanted to be in there because I'm an expert. All right. And self-proclaimed. Okay. And, I had to deal with the roster as is. Luckily there were some good keepers on there, mainly Draisaitl, Leon Draisaitl, Uncle Leon. He was hello. Sorry. I'm losing myself. But yeah, so Draisaitl was one of my keepers and there wasn't anyone else on the team that I was really, you know, loving. There was some kind of mid guys or just above mid. And I kind of went a different way. This team did have Adam Fox and Miro Heiskanen. And I knew like, I'm kind of with you, Nate. Like I think that defense should be prioritized a little bit. Like these top defenders, I think the value over replacement, that's a real thing. And I thought this was kind of the safest thing I could do. I could lock up two amazing defensemen that aren't going anywhere, like Adam Fox and Miro Heiskanen. Like, Fox got another 70-point season. Heiskanen's got he's in the 60s, right? And he's starting to pop off too. So these are great players. I felt really comfortable keeping those players, so I did that. You know, and I finished second, right? I lost in the finals, but I did have the second best points for in this league as well. So let's take a look at the draft. I loved my draft in this one. I felt really good about it. You know, so some of my best picks, I got Philip Forsberg at 71.
Nice.
Damn, how the hell? Like, this guy finished seventh overall in this scoring. So that was amazing for me. That's a guy we were on top of, Nate. And I'm really happy about that. I'm really proud about that we were pushing that, because people picked him up because of that. And obviously they got this guy's career high season, career high goals. Like, he's been smashing. So I don't know what that player's going to do next season. It'll be tough to match this, but this has been a great one for him. I also got Johnny Marchessault. I got him at 95. He finished 33rd. So that's a big win. And then how about Joel Eriksson Ek? I got it 122. He finished the 29th, and he was injured for like 2 weeks. This guy was flying. So that was a very nice draft pick. And that's not a guy that I'm normally on, right? Obviously, he's a great fantasy producer, but, you know, in category leagues more so than a points league. But he was just doing it all this year and got bumped up to the top line at one point, and the power play, he was just smashing. So I love that. I also did get Aiden Hill at 194. And, you know, he finished at 435, but he was injured for a lot of the season. But before that, this guy was solid. He had some of the best metrics for a goalie, right? And he really, again, like, when you're doing 0G, if you can get a guy in there that's gives you some, like, solidifies that position a little bit. And even short term, like, I held Aiden Hill all year. And I felt fine with that. Obviously, I put him in IR and was able to stream in some goalies here and there. But to me, like, that is major value at that draft position. It's insane. I also picked Seth Jarvis. I had him, which was a really nice pick. Where did I get him? Oh, God. I'm looking at the wrong thing. This is great podcasting, everybody. Yeah. 143rd, I got Seth Jarvis. So that was great. I mean, he smashed all year, and that was a sleeper that we were looking at. But yeah, the problem with Jarvis is he was great, but I dropped him and I didn't get the value. Oh, no. So I'll talk about that. Some of my worst picks, there wasn't too many in this league, which I felt good about. Again, my drafting this season, just on all my teams, I felt really solid about. I don't see a lot of missteps in the important areas. It was more like some flyer picks that didn't pan out. You know, maybe one out of my top seven in each league is like, okay, that's not the best. But in this particular draft, I picked Vitek Vanacek at 146. Didn't really work out. I mean, that's 0G. But, I mean, Bobrovsky was out there. I could have got him two rounds later. Bobrovsky! So I think, I think I should have, like, we thought that he wasn't even going to get the net in Florida. I think that's why he fell so far. Like, so that's that, whatever. Can't cry over spilled milk, can we, Nate?
No.
But yeah, other than that, like, I thought my picks were solid. I felt great about the team, and I still do in hindsight when I'm looking at that. Like, I got Vitek Vanacek and Aiden Hill, and I end up dropping Vanacek. That's fine. So anywho,
that Forsberg pick.
Oh, yeah.
That one feels good. And I was talking about it when your Wi-Fi was cutting out. Forsberg was one of the guys I mentioned. I took Batherson right before that. I distinctly remember, like, looking at it, and I was like, I really think I need to take a right wing here. But there was guys there, like Forsberg was there. I forget who the other one was. I was talking about Reinhardt, I think, was one of them who I could have taken. Ended up being a little bit higher on Batherson, but that was definitely a mistake in retrospect. Yeah, it was Konechny, Hedman, Reinhardt, Forsberg all went in the next 10 picks, and obviously Forsberg being the best of them. So hats off to you making the right pick there.
Yeah, I mean, we were high on him. Like, I don't know. I that's a great thing about having projections. Like, I drafted off my projections for every team. Yep. And I'm happy with every draft, more so than I ever have been in any year of fantasy hockey. So it's a no-brainer. You need to get your projections out there, whether you're using Nate's or mine or someone else's, like, or make your own. That's what you do. Don't go off Yahoo. Don't go off Fantrax. That stuff makes no sense, right? You need, like, a tuned-in fantasy guy or gal giving you some good information. So anyways, pro tip, all right? Expert, right, Nate? Yeah. So I'm looking at my best ads for this team. I did add Joey Decord again on December 18th, and I got all that value out of him. I ended up punting him. That's fine. Blake Coleman, I got him as well again on this team and smashed. I loved it. December 11th, I think I actually got him before. And then I was like, I saw him in another league. I'm like, Blake Coleman's still there? Yeah, this guy's smashing. I'm grabbing that. I love that. I got Thomas Hurdle on December 12th, which actually turned into a trade that Nate and I did. So that was a nice little piece as well. And would have been good, you know, if I didn't trade him, like to have him for these Vegas games. Like he's doing stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I also got Brock Faber on January 4th, kept him rest of the season. Besides, I did end up dropping him like for my finals week because I had a lot of Minnesota and they had a terrible schedule. But lastly, I got Jordan Binnington, Mr. Ben in the Sauce, March 4th, and I rode him into the playoffs to a second place finish. God dang. some of my worst drops. Again, there wasn't too many egregious drops. Jarvis on November 16th for Raymond. I picked up Lucas Raymond, and then I dropped him for like Casey DeSmith. So that right there is not very good, folks. All right. You don't drop Seth Jarvis and pick up Casey DeSmith, especially when Demko's not injured. All right. That's showing no good, but that's fine. At that point, too, in fairness to me, like, yeah, he was kind of being moved around the lineup. I think there was times during the year where he was on power play two. And I think that was during one of those times. I'm like, I'm not farting around with this, like, especially with RBA here, Brandon Moore doing his thing. I'm like, no. But obviously when Gensel got in there and you got Jarvis stapled to the top line, top power play, like this guy's popping off. So I think he's going to have a great year next year. Did you get Jarvis anywhere, Nate? I didn't look at your drafts here, but.
No, I didn't end up with Jarvis anywhere. He was still a pretty trendy pick, so I think he got picked up before I was ready to pull the trigger in most spots.
Well, I'm a trendy guy, Nate. All right, when I go out, I wear a black t-shirt, skinny jeans, and a teeny weeny beanie. I do that. All right. Sorry. And then I also, again, Gus Nyquist, another guy, like probably should have held on to that guy. But how would we have known that he's just going to continue doing something he's never done before on Nashville, who at times this season they couldn't score. The only line scoring was their top line, but they did it all year. It's crazy. Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist were like fantasy assets all year. What the hell? That's a good data point there, right? Like I don't think Nyquist is gonna do this next season, but I mean, I'm definitely a little higher on him than I was, right? Like I probably projected him. I'd have to look at it, but it was probably for like 40 points or something. This guy's going for 70. So, I mean, we're probably looking at like a 55 point Nyquist next season or 60 maybe if he does, you know, everything right. And he has 70 in the wheelhouse. It's insane. So anyways, shout out to Gus Nyquist. That's fine. Let's talk about my trades. This is where this league was really fun. And this is where I beefed up my team to a ridiculous level. And Nate, I wasn't here when you were talking about it. So did you talk a little bit about pick swaps and things like that? I don't want to give a bunch of redundant information here.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically all the pick swaps, we have to trade one pick for another. So that's why you'll see a later pick for a sooner pick on all of these trades, pretty much between a team going for it and a team rebuilding.
Yeah. So at one point in the season, I saw that I was in contention. I think I was second place already before I started making these trades. And literally after Nate and I did a podcast, we had like such a casual conversation. I'm like, oh, you know, I don't even know how it came up, but like, I'm like, oh, I like Zibanejad. And you're like, well, I'll trade him to you if you want. I was like, for who? Like, I don't know. Who do you got? Like, he was so casual. He's like, I don't know. What do you think? Like, oh, Hurdle. Okay. I'll take Thomas Hurdle. Yeah. What do you want? Sixth, or what did I give you? Like a fifth rounder or something? It's like, yeah, sure. That seems fine. I was like, oh my God, I just got Zibby. We got DJ Zibby. So anyways, but that one really broke the dam open. So I made that trade with Nate and then I just got my mind into that zone. Right. And I feel like I made a lot of good trades. I'm really happy with the trades I made. Unfortunately I traded away the farm, like my team next year with picks. It's not going to be good. It's going to be really ugly. Nate, you just experienced this. I don't know if I went as hard as you, giggity, but you know, like I got nothing in the first few rounds next season. It's going to be pretty damn painful to draft. But anyways, so I did that one, that trade. I traded Sean Monahan and a fourth for Vinny Tro and a 14th. And Trocheck was amazing this year. Obviously, this guy redlined as well. He's got 77 points or something like that. I called Trocheck for 70 points last season and everybody laughed at me. Not you, Nate, but everybody else. They laughed at me and he didn't get 70 points. But 77 this year, I knew he could do it. So there you go. I love Vinny Tro, friend of the show. I also traded the Coiler. I had him. All right, he filled the bowl, and I'm like, buddy, this stinks. Get the hell out of there. What did you eat, baby food? I traded him and a 6 for Chicken Necks, Chris Kreider, and a 10th. So I was loading up, obviously, on the Rangers and their power play. The Rangers had an amazing schedule. Little did I know, one of those weeks, it was like a 2-game week, and then the next week was like 4 games with 4 off nights. So, but I survived the 2-game week, no problem. It was great. I was able to supplement. So I really thought I had the finals in the bag. It just didn't happen that way. But I also traded Valerie Nichushkin for Matt Boldy, 1-for-1, when Nichushkin was out in the player assistance program. So to me, that was really interesting. We talked about that one during the season, so I'm not going to go too much into that. But Boldy popped off after I got him. That really helped me secure first place, right? Yep. So that was a great trade for me. Nichushkin didn't really do anything for my opponent. That's the guy I lost to in the finals. So Nichushkin did really pop off there. So it was a net positive for me. It was his other players that really smoked me. But I also traded John Gaudreau and a 7th rounder for Jordan Kyrou and a 13th. Okay, didn't really work out. And then I traded 1-for-1 John Tavares again for Philip Hronek straight up. All right. And yeah, this is an interesting trade because Tavares was doing well at the time when I traded him. But he wasn't making my lineup. He's center only. And I needed, like, the reason I went for Hronek is because I thought I could get him first off. And Vancouver was one of those teams. It was that week where Vancouver and Buffalo were the only teams that were really rosterable. And so I thought, yeah, that makes total sense to me. And I made the trade. I gave up some value with Tavares, and he did really well after I traded him. But he wasn't getting into my lineup anyway. So it's one of those trades where both people sort of benefit. I don't know. What do you think about trades like that, Nate?
Yeah, I think there's definitely points, especially late in the season. Like, you got nothing left to play for that season, but to lay it all out there. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it looks terrible that Hronek was so cold and you got nothing. But I mean, if the guy's not going to play for you, like, what value is he in your lineup? So yeah, get him out there, get something in your lineup, get something, somebody who can score you points in the playoffs. Like, yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to lay it all out there and try to bring it home. I will say you did go harder than I did. So next year might be a little painful for you in terms of, yeah, you traded your 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. So yeah, you're going to have your 3 keepers and not pick until the 8th round. So that's going to be.
And I didn't win. Oh God.
Well, you stayed in the money. You made your money back. You're free rolling for a couple of years. So
I'm going to put that into a tax-free savings account. I'm going to look into it in 20 years. I'm going to make some serious bank, everybody. I'm super stoked on that. But yeah. So anyways, that's that league. There wasn't too much to take from it. I honestly felt like I did everything possible to bring home that chip. I drafted well. I streamed well in this league because I was really focused on it. And I knew the guys I was up against, right? Like yourself, even though Nate wasn't really in contention especially the second half, he was still there every day, you know, 3 a.m. Eastern time, picking up the exact streamer that I wanted, like a dingus that he is. So I just knew what I needed to do. So I streamed really well in this league. I just got smoked in the finals. And, you know, for context, the team that I played against, he was the second place team, but he had the highest scoring week of any team in the entire season in the finals. So his team, like, just went off. Every player went off. And to me, that's just a bad beat. There's nothing really to learn from that. I feel like I did everything right. And I had a good week as well. I had the second highest, or maybe it was the third highest scoring week of that week there. But I mean, more than enough to win, but you can't win when you're playing against that. So we'll see what next week season brings. Could be ugly, but you know, I'll likely be looking to pick up some picks myself, probably pretty damn early. You know what I mean? Like, whatever, get out of here. I don't care. So that's sort of where I'm at with that. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, it was an interesting situation that developed in that league because you and Reese's Pieces were like far and away the points for leaders. You both went for it pretty hard in terms of trades. It was pretty clear to me, like, that was one of the reasons that I chose not to, like, even attempt and started selling players for picks and stuff. Was I just felt like one of the two of you would be there at the end and would be crushing, and everything would be going right. And, you know, that's fantasy hockey. Like, I think either of you had a really good shot to win that particular week. And it just so happened that his players had that week that they did, and yours had a solid week, but not a spectacular week that they would have needed to overcome it. So, it's fantasy hockey, right? Like, at the end of the day, when I looked at your two teams going into that, I was like, this is truly a coin flip. I could see this going either way. And you win some and you lose some. And so, you know, when I look at my leagues this year and I won 3/4 of my leagues, and I'm going to clickbait title this episode, how I won 75% of my leagues this year. Like, I'm very, very aware that, like, when it comes down to it, like, you're defending on a bunch of coin flips to actually bring home the title in the final round. Like, a lot of things have to go right for you to get there in the end. But I do agree, like, in terms of, like, what you did, like, I don't know what I would nitpick about what you did in order to put yourself in the best position possible to bring it home. So I think that sometimes there isn't much to take from it. You just get beat at the end and you got to tip your cap to the other guy and say, I'll see you next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Reese's Pieces. Pete, you're a dang legend, but I'm coming for you, buddy. You're on notice. All right. We don't do that. All right. I do have a third league here. Do you want me to get into it, Nate? I know we're getting up on time here. What do you think?
Let's have it. Let's have it. The people want it.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, now I'm going to really take my time. Okay. you know, this is the league that I really want to just bring a lot of attention to because it's the one I won. For God's sake. I
should have stopped.
Yeah, I know. You had your chance. That's it. All right? That's it. Oh, my God. It's going to be funny, and I'll update this, you know, in a later pod, but like I'm on track to get, like, in both my points leagues that I'm still playing, second place in both. I got second place in the Experts League. Like, there were so many chances for me to get second. Right. And I, like, last year it was third. I was in third. So next year I should be getting first place finishes, but I was glad to bring home the chip in this one. This is the A&G Listener League. It was awesome. Great, great group of people there. 12 team points league head to head with the listeners. So my record there, I was first overall, 17-5. It was great. I finished, obviously I won the championship there. I was first overall in the regular season in points for. It wasn't really close. Like, yeah, there was some teams, like, and I'm not bragging, like, this is more about, like, drafting, I think, because, and I'll get into it, but, like, I did stream in here, but it was like tinkering. There was never anything where I was like, oh, I need to get that streamer. Like, there was a couple times where I'm like, I'm fine. Like I'll just leave it. Like, I know you and I talked about use every ad. Like, this is the only league of my 5 head-to-heads where I was like, sometimes I would have 2 out of 4 ads and I'd be like, nothing makes sense. Like, I'm going to keep this team the way it is because it's good. I don't need to drop anybody. I don't want to drop anyone. They all have good schedules, whatever. Right. So, I picked at 4 in this league, and, you know, obviously my best pick was my 4th overall pick, Nathan McKinnon. How the terrific hell
first I got name. This?
Yeah, exactly. All Nathans are beauties. That's confirmed. Can they do what this man does? I don't know, Nate. We still are waiting for that footage of your hockey there.
Yeah, my beer.
Yeah, that's going to be some nice off-season content. I know you want to see that, as do I. All right. Nathan McKinnon, picked him at 4th. He finished first overall in this league scoring. Clearly, this guy's had a great season. So I picked Sebastian Aho at 69. Nice. Oh, hell yeah, it was nice. He finished at 24th. So I love that. I mean, that was a little bit unexpected for me, for him to kind of pop off the way he did. I picked up Noah Dobson at 76. He finished at 36. Again, I got Johnny Marchessault at 93. He finished at 37. And then I got Cole Caulfield at 117, and he finished at 49. So those are a bunch of dubs right there. That's just set it and forget it kind of stuff, right? It's like, I had those guys on my team. They're popping off. Like, you know what? I'm not going to be dropping any of those guys. I'm just going to ride them into the sunset. And that's kind of what happened. So a lot of really good draft picks there. My worst picks, I did take a ride with Timo Meier at 28 here. That's the highest I drafted Meier. I got him in 2 spots this year. That's the highest I took him. I think I got him at like 37 in the other league. I took him in a points league. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see that Meier is thriving now. And hopefully they can use this as a data point moving into next season, like this is what this man needs to produce, right? He needs 19 minutes out there. He needs access to the best players on the team. He needs power play one. Like, what are we doing, right? And I really do, like, this is something Lindy Ruff said this year too. Timo Meier was battling an injury this year throughout the year. So we didn't see full Timo. We didn't see full Timo time. So that's a player I'm low-key interested in at value next season, right? If he's going to 28 next season, hell no. Like, but there's no way he would. Not with his production this season. So, but anyways, I picked him at 28. He finished at 99. That show ain't no good. Zach Werenski, I picked him at 45. I'm high on the player, but I think I could have waited a little bit there on Zach Werenski. Like, that's my fourth pick there. I think, yeah, that was my first defenseman. I took Zach Werenski. Like, I probably could have waited there. I don't remember who was available at the time, but I mean, Werenski was great.
Would you like me to tell you?
Yeah, tell me. Nate, while you're looking at that, like, yeah, Werenski finished at 105. So I got him at 45. He finished at 105. Obviously, I like the player, but I mean, who else was in that range, Nate?
Well, the next two picks were Jake Gensel and Artemi Panarin. So clearly not missing on anything there.
Panarin. Oh, God, I didn't need to know that. But I mean, did anyone predict that Panarin would up his shots per 60 numbers the way that he has and almost close to eclipsing 50 goals? Did you think that was in the realm of possibilities with Panarin?
No, I didn't. No, I definitely don't think it was totally crazy. I will say, like, the next three defensemen were Chychrun, Morrissey, and Hedman. Two out of those three you'd rather have had than Werenski this year. I mean, Werenski had a terrific season when all is said and done, but yeah, maybe round four feels a little early still, but I don't think that sunk your team.
No, not at all. I mean, I won, but that was a pick. I won. I wish I could have, made a bit more of a value pick there. That, like, we were big on Columbus going into it, and then all this garbage happened with Mike Babcock and, you know, and then Pascal Vincent getting in here. Like, it's just been mismanaged. They fired their GM finally. So hopefully, you know, and hopefully Laine gets healthy and we get what we should see there in Columbus of good players, like, you know, well-coached. I mean, that we won't get the well-coached part until Vincent's fired, but, you know, still there was a lot of hope there. So I think we both had Werenski for like 20 goals, right? Like, yep. And he didn't really get there, but yeah, amazing assist numbers. Werenski had a great season. Anywho. Werenski at 45. I picked Big Cousy at 172. I probably shouldn't have done that. All right. I thought there was some value there because my take on Cousy going into the season, he's attached to Pettersson. I think he's going to get more ice time. He's going to be prioritized more. Like, little did I realize, like, the guy can't play defense. All right. And he pisses his coaches off and they don't want him out on the ice. So fair enough. Right. I mean, he's training in Bali on like a set of stairs, like, buddy, get in the gym, you ding dong. All right. And, you know, stop buying so much conditioner and get your buns into the gym. All right. Get on an assault bike for the love of Pete. Anyways, digressing on Big Cousy. I love that man. Picked Verana again at 189. Both those picks there, Kuzmenko and Verana, there was better players available. Like, Brock Besser was available at that time. Robert Thomas was there, right? So they're just two wasted picks. I mean, at 172 and 189, who cares, right? Yeah. But I should have picked Besser. I knew I should have picked Besser at that point. It just felt, I don't know. I think I wanted to have Cousy on my team. Right. And I think that's kind of what I did there. So that's really that play there. My goalies on this team, who did I pick? Linus Ullmark at 165, and then vegetable lasagna, Karel Vemelka. I got him with my last pick at 213, promptly dropped his bum because I didn't need that. All right. So let's talk about my best ads. All right. That led me to victory. I added Jordan Binn in the sauce again. All right. November 13th, I held him rest of the season. So my goalies didn't change in this league. This was one league where I just kept the guys I had because our goalie scoring in this league, it's nothing, right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing too. You got to check your scoring settings, right? Like, you did the Fantasy Puck Creators League where goalies had big weighting, didn't they, Nate? Like,
yep.
in this league, these are Kakupful settings, but last year Kakupful settings where they, like, this year in Kakupful, they actually added some points to saves, they added some points to wins, right? Whereas this season is still like, no. So I didn't care really who my goalies were. I just wanted guys that I knew would give me a good chance to get some points, right? And Linus Ullmark, they did the, you know, the 50-50 split. I mean, maybe more like the 60-40 leading Swayman's way, but that's fine. Ullmark gave me great starts when he was in there. And then Binnington, yeah, he had a low-key good season. This is the type of guy you probably want on your team, right? It's a great zero-G option because you don't have to spend any draft capital to get him. I added him off waivers, for God's sake, and I kept him all year, so... those are good. I added Matthias Ekholm again, February 24th, kept him rest of the season. That was great. And to me, like worst drops in this particular team, there's nothing egregious at all. I went through all my drops. I was like, nothing like, oh my God, what was I doing there? Like again, Nyquist, I dropped a bunch of times, added him a couple times, dropped him again. Big Koozie, I added him, dropped him a couple times. Big deal, right? Didn't cost me anything, so I'm not too worried about that. In terms of trades, I only made one, and it was offered to me, which is kind of nice. Like someone was just like, does anybody want Dylan Cousins for the playoff schedule? I was like, okay. we just made a one-for-one trade. I traded Luke Hughes straight up for Dylan Cousins. And I was happy to have it. I kept Dylan Cousins for that good playoff schedule. He did okay, right? He really cooled off kind of towards the end there, but he had a little stretch of nice play. It's a tinkering trade. It was nothing. So, but honestly, the takeaways here, it's just like, it just went really well. This league went really well. I felt like I didn't have to pay attention to this league. And I'm not slighting anything. Like, it's just, this is how my draft went and how my players, things just worked really well, right? My top guys really performed and I didn't find myself going stream crazy because I was getting great production, right? And like I said, when I needed to, I would stream, but I was solid at every position. I made the most moves in this league here as well, but it was down from my numbers that I normally do. So I'm just happy to say I was able to like first off, two of my losses came against the same guy and I ended up playing that guy in the finals. And I whooped that biscuit. Oh yeah. It was good. So yeah, shout out to him. But I was able to avenge that loss when it mattered most. And again, of my five losses, four of those losses were 10 points or under. 10 points or under on four. So everything went right. I could have had almost an undefeated season, right? So that said, like, this is not something we could bank on to happen too often. I was really grateful for this league, like, just because it made me feel good, right? Because in a couple scratching and clawing, like, please, like, can you just, I need that dub. But this one, I was like, I could just kind of set it and forget it. Just look over and be like, oh, I won another matchup. Great. Okay. So, but that's really it. I mean, anything you see there in that league, Nate?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely another case where, drafting solidly, getting good value on a bunch of guys. I mean, you had a big hit there with Dobson too, that made a big difference for sure. But yeah, overall, just a pretty solid effort front to back. You had some decent competition in here. Like I'm just looking at it now. You had 5,900 fantasy points on the season. The guy that you're mentioning, who you faced in the finals, had 5,800. You had another at 5,700. So you had some company at the top for sure in this league. But overall, I think this one was fairly textbook, and I can't really, again, poke a lot of holes in what you did here.
You're damn skippy, buddy. I did want to give a quick summary here just on some of the other leagues that not even close to the what I just did there. But there was a 16-team full bangers cats league. It was probably my worst showing of the year. So I definitely want to mention that. And I didn't make the playoffs there. I think I was 10th out of 16. And yeah, like... And this is kind of to the point we were talking about a little bit earlier, but zero G definitely the way, but I feel like I might've waited a bit too long to grab a goalie, or I might've grabbed the wrong goalie at that time. You know what I mean? Like, and that's something I want to dive into a little bit in the off season here is like category leagues and specific strategy for category leagues. What we're looking for, because it's a 16 teamer. And basically that means, like, depends on who you get, like, the wire is bare, especially to start the season, right? It's like, it's kind of scary. So you're losing those matchups. You're almost punting the goalie categories, right? And I felt like I was doing that a little bit at the beginning of the season. I think I had, like, I drafted something like, Vemelka was one of my guys, and like Philip Grubauer, right? Those are my two guys, and they didn't start very well. But I mean, throughout the year too, Like I had Decord, I had UPL, I had Ingram at times, you know, during the season, and I dropped them probably before they took off, right? So I think my zero G management was probably the worst in that league. And I think there's some takeaways there that I just need to look at and like dive into my ads and drops and see, and maybe hang on a little bit more too, right? But yeah, that's an interesting league. Cats leagues is something I want to focus on moving forward next year. And then in my dynasty leagues, one of them was the A&G Dynasty League. And I just missed out on the playoffs there. That's an 18-teamer. I placed seventh. I was only 8 points out of the lead. Again, my goalies were an issue there. That's a category league as well. And I have Jake Ottinger, who didn't play amazing this year, but then I had a bunch of backups. Like I had Laurent Brossois and like Kevin Lankinen. Kevin Lankinen! So yeah, it's I wasn't getting goalie starts, enough goalie starts. And again, it's a big league. I think it's a 18-teamer again. So like, there's no one on the wire you can pick up. So that was kind of an issue. And then I was actually in a full, I don't know if you ever played a full salary cap league, Nate, have you?
I haven't. No,
it's an experience, man. Like, and I got to say, I was out of my element for sure. I got pumped. It wasn't great. I liked my drafting. I drafted off all my projections and everything, but I mean, it's just another element, right, that I'm not familiar with. So, you know, and I think, honestly, like it was just one of the lower leagues on my radar as well. Like I didn't really give it the time that it needed, whereas other managers really were, right? So anyways, I think I'll probably get rid of that one. It's a bit too much for me to keep track of, but it was fun and well run. I don't know. But yeah, that's about all I got, my guy. What do you got to say?
It seems like you had a solid season. I mean, the results didn't come through for you, especially Kekuffle. I can't believe that. First and second in points four in consecutive years and missed the playoffs in both. That's pretty tough luck in back-to-back years in Kekuffle. So, but it looks like with the new system there, you'll be moving up a couple of divisions anyway. So I'm sure you'll be on your way up to join me in tier one sooner rather than
that'd
later.
That'd be so epic, buddy. You and me in tier one. Let's make it happen. Oh, God. It could be a couple of years, but you know.
yeah. Overall, I think it was a really successful season in totality for both of us, for Apples and Genos as brand. Yeah, obviously, we're gonna dig into everything even more in the off season. So if you made it this far, I mean, if you're 94 minutes into an episode that's coming at the end of the fantasy hockey season, then clearly you're some kind of degenerate just like us. So, you'll want to.
We
know
see
that.
You.
Yeah, we're gonna be here all off season long. Zero G episode will be coming once I've had a chance to dive into those stats, put together my usual. Recap on the points that were scored, how different goalies performed at different points throughout the season, so on and so forth. We're going to dig into our projections, compare them to other projections, see how we performed, try to take some takeaways from that so we can get better once again next year. But yeah, I think quite honestly, Blake, like the proof is in the pudding for both of us here. And the way that we were able to draft and have good teams and at least be around it in every single league. I feel like we drafted well and our projections have a lot to do with that. So I'm pretty confident in the product here and in the results as well. So overall,
hell yes.
I think it was pretty successful. Last order of business, unfortunately, I'm going to recap the head-to-head streamer death match. It's still ongoing. We've still got, the rest of this week for it to go. But you picked Andre Kuzmenko, and that is the absolute trump card of the year because Kuzmenko has scored 36 Kekuffle points in four games somehow. I picked Thomas Hertl, and he's had a nice week. Like, he's had 19.75 points. I haven't looked back, but that probably would have won a fair number of our matchups on the year in terms of one-week matchups. What am I going to say? It looks like Kuzmenko is going to run away with this one unless Hertl has a four-goal game left in him here somewhere. that might be all she wrote. Like we already knew, it is going to be Blake on the season for the head-to-head streamer death match. We'll have to come up with a better name for it next year. As Blake mentioned, I don't want to be expired.
No, yeah.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll edit it in post, but that's going to be all that we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you didn't hear today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band that are there for supplying music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.